proceed to the fifth case, Blue Chip Casino versus Local One. Mr. Ladd?
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Mike Lead. I represent Blue Chip Casino. In preparing for the hearing today, I was struck again how thoroughly this has been briefed, and in view of that fact and in view of the late hour this morning, I will not try to belabor the point too much. The court will recall that the parties bargained for an initial contract. They bargained over the space of about 9 months. Very early in bargaining, the clause that this case seems to turn on was tendered by the union, 26.01, and the company accepted it. There was, by all accounts, no discussion whatever about what that meant. The parties did bargain further, as the court knows, and the union also tendered a complete agreement type of a clause, which appears later in the contract. The company came back with a clause that said, we want a further understanding that there is going to be no past practices and that anything that's not reflected in this agreement is not part of the agreement. The union left that out of its next draft, but the company insisted, and it ended up getting in the contract that was finally signed by the parties. And as the court knows, the matter eventually reached arbitration when the Blue Chip Casino management said, whatever our policy might be with regard to our other employees, the union, despite bargaining for a lot of benefits and wages and the like, never mentioned extended medical leave, and therefore it was our belief that that did not make its way into the contract. The court knows from the extensive briefs that the arbitrator interpreted, or at least he said he interpreted 2601 to say that since extended medical leave is a type of unpaid leave, the employer essentially must now consider any bargaining unit member who might apply for extended medical leave and then justify, apparently, based on adverse effect on operations, why it does not grant that type of leave. Our argument in this case is that the arbitrator took a clear and fairly pro-management provision, which is 2601, which reads, leave of absences without pay may be granted in writing for specific purposes and for specific periods of time if and when in the employer's sole judgment such leaves will not unduly interfere with operations of the employer, and in essence has made that read, at least as to extended medical leave, the employer must grant that type of leave unless it can justify adverse interference with operations of the employer. We also
can hear you. What circumstances would such a leave occur under the language and from the company's point of view?
Well, from our interpretation, Your Honor, is that if what he's saying is that all that an employee has to do is to request a leave without pay.
What you're saying. How does that provision fit into the agreement? I acknowledge that the union apparently tendered it, but from the company's point of view, when would that occur?
I think it's at the sole discretion of the management of the company, Your Honor. I think that it's...
Give me an example.
We made up one in our briefs.
Well, somebody I know
wants
that.
To go surfing.
No, but a legitimate one, something that would be...
Somebody might want to take leave to care for a grandparent, let's say, which would be a situation that doesn't fall into the Family and Medical Leave Act because it's not a qualifying family relationship. Our view of this is that the employer has the sole right to say, if you can't find leave under this contract in some other provision where we've specifically addressed it, military leave, let's say, family and medical leave, all of which are specifically addressed, you can come and ask for that type of leave, and in our utter sole discretion, we can grant it or not. And I think our point of view as well is unlike what the arbitrator held, make blanket decisions and say there are some reasons that we're not going to ever approve a leave. And we took a position in this case, of course, extended medical leave, unlike family and medical leave for 12 weeks, is something that was not bargained for, was never agreed upon, made its way nowhere into the contract. And for the arbitrator to impose that on the employer was to import his notions of fairness and to read a provision into the agreement that isn't there and that no one ever asked for, and as I've said, the company didn't agree to. And I think it also overrides the other provisions of the agreement, the arbitration clause, which, as in most collective bargaining agreements, says the arbitrator can't add or modify to the agreement. the entire agreement and waiver clause at 27.01, which says we've had every opportunity to bargain everything we want to talk about here, and this is our complete agreement. And then, as I alluded at the beginning, one more clause, just in case that wasn't clear enough, that says nothing in this agreement requires the employer to continue any benefit practice or other term or condition that's not required hereby. So, I could talk a lot more about the arguments we've made here, but in a nutshell, that's it. We believe that the arbitrator found a way to make this look like contract interpretation, and this court, like many others, certainly understands that in general, if the arbitrator is interpreting the agreement, that's pretty much sacrosanct. On the other hand, the court seemingly recognizes that arbitrators are pretty smart people, and as a number of the cases from this court have said, an arbitrator that merely cloaks his award or his interpretation in words of contract interpretation is not thereby insulated from some sort of searching judicial review. And with all deference to Judge Sharp, his very brief award sheds no light on this other than to say that he apparently found, as we did, that this was a very close case. So, in a nutshell, unless the court has questions, I would sit down. We ask that the court reverse and remand this matter with the direction that the arbitration will be vacated.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Reed. Ms. Reynolds?
May it please the court, Mr. Lead. I think it's apparent from the contents of the argument that the court has just heard that what the company is doing here is seeking to have the court reconsider the merits of the arbitrator's interpretation. Mr. Lead just spoke to the company's position on the proper interpretation of Section 2702, the proper interpretation of 2601, how those provisions should relate to each other and the significance of the bargaining history. Those are all arguments that go to the merits of the arbitrator's interpretation of the contract, and that is something that is clearly not reviewable by this court. The court has made very clear that when in doubt, the court will find that the arbitrator was engaging in contract interpretation, and as long as that's what he was doing, then the award must be enforced. And the company has not brought forth any reasons, either today or in its briefs, that we find at all persuasive to think that the arbitrator was doing anything other than interpreting the contract. Mr. Weed,
did the arbitrator have a determination that that without his, I guess we'll call it translation or interpretation, that clause didn't mean anything? Or was he just saying because it had the idea of some kind of, they may grant some kind of a leave, that they meant to say more?
Your Honor, I don't believe that the arbitrator specifically stated that his interpretation was necessary to save the language of 2601 and give it some meaning. But that is an argument that the union made, and we would maintain that argument here. The interpretation that the company is advancing would basically write the words out of the contract, quote, if and when in the employer's sole judgment such leaves will not unduly interfere with operations of the employer. Because according to the company, it doesn't matter whether there is any undue interference with the operations. They can just issue a blanket statement that they're never going to consider these types of requests for leave.
Well, if they were to consider, just for example, that's what I was looking for, mm-hmm. an example that's not completely hypothetical, but if a grandparent apparently isn't under the Family Leave Act and someone wants to take care of a grandparent, that, you know, you can't stop them, but I guess when there's the leave, would they be getting benefits? Would there be some continuing guarantee to get your job back, or what?
This is unpaid leave. I'm not actually able to answer as I stand here, the question of whether there other benefits would continue. I believe that...
There must be something.
I believe that health insurance coverage and so on would continue, but I'm not 100% certain of that.
That's significant, isn't it? That is significant.
I believe that is the case, Your Honor. And obviously the understanding of leave would be that the employee would be returning at some point, and it's spelled out in 26.01 that the leave would be granted in writing for specific purposes and specific periods of time, so that there would be some limit as to the time that this employee would be off, but it would be without pay.
Well, that's why I guess when we talk about interpretation and notification, it just seems that, and apparently, is that correct? The union submitted this, tendered this language?
Yes.
Does it have some reference to past practices? Was there a CBA before this?
No, this is the first contract.
Mm-hmm. So they were just going on the employment manual then, huh?
That's all that had been in existence before that. Mm-hmm. There was a past practice under that manual of granting extended medical leave as well as various other types of unpaid leave. That was not the basis for the arbitrator's decision, but that practice did exist, and the union also put on some evidence that this same language has been interpreted at another casino in the area as allowing employees to get unpaid extended medical leave. Am I correct that Your Honor is concerned about the word may? And how the union gets where it's going, given the fact that there is this discretionary language.
Well, it seems that the way it's written, that and I'm not trying to do anything more than just go by what it's written, is that this is something that is pretty much confined to the discretion of the company. And if the interpretation is such that no, it isn't, there's an actual right to have a hearing and to for the union or for the company to have to prove that it would be detrimental or have some effect, rather than just saying no. There seems to be more in it than is written here, the way it's interpreted.
I think Mr. Leed has overstated what it was that the arbitrator ordered. The arbitrator ordered the company to consider leave requests subject to the criterion that's stated in the contract. He did not order the company to provide a justification. Mr. Leed stated this morning that in all future leave requests, if this award is enforced, the company would have to prove that it did not, would have to prove that the leave was going to unnecessarily interfere with the company operations. I don't believe that that's what the arbitrator ordered. We relied in our arbitration brief on significant case law issued by arbitrators in the matter of interpretation of collective bargaining agreements, holding that when you've got this type of language that refers to, for example, the sole discretion of the company or the sole judgment of the company, what that requires the company to do is to use its discretion in good faith and reasonably, based upon the circumstances before it, rather than to make a blanket decision such as the company made here. And
what was the blanket decision the company made?
The blanket decision the company made here was that they were not going to even consider any requests for extended medical leave.
And where he gave the example of a person, let's just say it's a valued employee as opposed to just any employee, and that's a distinction that seems to be exposed here. It isn't just everybody that they would give this to, but if there's somebody that really is a valued employee and they want to take this extended leave and they want them back, so they would be able to give them, for the state of care for the grandparent who's dying, this kind of thing. But if someone else comes in that isn't a valued employee and they consider it and say, no.
Well, I don't believe those are the facts here, Your Honor.
No, here, I'm just looking at how you know, when we affirm or do whatever we're going to do here, do we in effect interpret what the arbitrator did?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I guess what I don't understand is what this what kind of a leave they have to consider. It's real easy mm-hmm. to say yes, we considered it mm-hmm. and decided no. All right. You say, well, is that good faith?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into other provisions.
Your Honor, the union's position would be that under 26.01, and in light of the arbitral case law on how that type of discretionary provision is interpreted, any time a bargaining unit member makes a request for unpaid leave of absence, the company has to consider that, and they are to use their good faith in applying that criterion of undue interference. However, they do have a considerable amount of discretion in how they apply that to the particular leave request. So if the company were to deny the request and the union felt that denial was a violation of the contract, the union's remedy would be to file a grievance and, if it wanted, eventually take the case to arbitration. But the union would clearly bear the burden of proof in that arbitration because it would be a contract violation case. And I believe that under the arbitral case law, the union would have to show that the company abused its discretion or acted in an arbitrary and capricious is the standard the arbitrators usually use on this. I wanted to speak to Section 2702, which the company has focused on. We don't believe that that poses any kind of a problem here because 2702 simply says that the employer is not required to continue any practice that is not required hereby. Well, precisely what the arbitrator found here is that considering and accepting these applications for extended leave is required by the contract, and the arbitrator specifically acknowledged his limitations under 2702. He expressly rejected any argument that the past practice would continue of its own force, and then he spent a good 3 pages of the opinion specifically discussing his interpretation of 2602. I see my time's up, so if the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll step down.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Reynolds. Mr. Lead?
Very briefly, I don't think that either counsel that is here today may be able to address the question about what rights somebody has that may be off on one of these unpaid leaves. My view would be, under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, they maintain seniority for a while. But I don't think we can be certain whether the insurance continues
Well, is that something that's typically written into a CBA?
I would think it would be written into a CBA.
I don't know. And do you know?
Yes, I would say in my experience that typically that is written in, that the parties deal with it somehow.
Well, is it written into this contract?
No, sir, it's not.
All right.
It talks about the fact that full and part-time employees may be entitled to benefits, but it doesn't say what happens if they go off on a leave, which the court will note, if this potentially 40 weeks were stacked onto the 12 weeks under the Family and Medical Leave Act, you can have an employee off for a year. That's what's at play here. Now, what's interesting about this is, as I've already alluded, nobody asked for it. There was no discussion. I made clear at the arbitration and asking the union's bargaining representative, did you ask anybody what the parameters are of this type of an unpaid extended medical leave? Who decides? Who decides how many weeks it is? He had no idea. Even though he had employees on his bargaining committee that were there at Blue Chip that had received the Blue Chip Casino Handbook, and I don't know whether from the union's point of view it was error to forget to ask for this or whether they consciously traded something else they wanted, but the fact of the matter is they had plenty of opportunity to nail down some of these details. And the problem again with the arbitrator's award from our point of view is simply that we think he ignores what is 2601 contract language that's very much tilted toward management's right to make these decisions virtually unfettered. If you listen to what Ms. Reynolds said, that's exactly our fear, that any time we turn something down, we're going to be challenged to have to justify it, and while that's not a matter of this record, that's already happened in a case. It's not an issue in this one, but the employer bore the burden of proof because we terminated somebody. It's not quite the way it's been portrayed. So for the reasons that have been more than thoroughly argued in the briefs and here today, we would ask again that this be reversed with directions to vacate.
Thank you. Thanks, Leah. Thank you, Ms. Reynolds. The case is taken under advisement. The court will